Well, thank you all for coming today. I know some of you, like Wade, have travelled all the way from Queensland.
Well, it was tough.
Yep, and Emily from Swan Hill.
Yep.
Alex, where did you come from?
Warrnambool, so 3-hour drive. Yeah, happy to come.
Louis, the big walk.
I feel really down here. I'm only about 10 minutes away, and that's with peak hour.
And then from little old Mount Toolibong, about an hour's drive from here. So what we all have in common is our sort of off-grid experience in different areas. I mean, we've got installers like Alex and Emily, we've got designers like Wade, and we've got electrical inspectors who actually have some expertise in off-grid, which is kind of a special category, really.
It is, and we all know that the off-grid world has quite a lot of compliance issues. And as we both know, Section 6 and 5139 has quite a lot of complexities to it. So.
Typical electrical inspector, straight to the course.
yes, that's right. I'm wired that way.
Must be great at parties. Yes. I'm wired that way. 3.4.1.
Yeah. And then I get that look. Is he for real?
Yeah, it's kind of like an alternative Bible, isn't it?
Yes. We're just wired that way.
Yeah.
Sadly.
So I want to sort of learn a bit about your experiences in sort of working in off-gridness, let's call it that, whether it's the actual installation, the designing, the inspection. So Alex, tell me a little bit about your journey. I mean, what brought you into the off-grid world?
Well, I suppose since I was an apprentice, I've been installing solar. So back in the premium feeding tariff day and worked my way up then and decided I'd have a crack out on my own. And, you know, probably thanks to Emily. she steered me in the off-grid direction. I installed a few jobs for her early days and, you know, granted she was good enough to let me have a crack. And, I suppose since then I've really took a keen interest in it and, done a few of our own and things like that and sort of venturing into that space. So, yeah.
So you sort of slid into it from on-grid to off-grid?
Yeah, pretty well, yeah. Well, that's the progression, you know, grid connect solar and then grid connect batteries and then, you know, what's the next stage there is, off-grid, so.
We definitely saw your keen interest when we first chatted to you about maybe doing some installs for us. And no one more keen than Alex to get out there and get into off-grid for sure.
Oh, it's great and, you know, particularly I love to travel, you know, to remote areas and things like that, and that's typically where off-grid lies. And it's great to get out there and, you know, you do a bit of camping and you get to work on site and things like that. It's great. Yeah.
Sounds a little bit like a holiday, working holiday, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is pretty much. Yeah, you know, you get away.
Do you take a swag with you?
Yeah, we did a few times. Yeah, early days. Yeah, yeah.
You can get on some interesting properties too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you know. Typically, when you go out to remote places like that, the owners are very accommodating and things like that. Well, really, you don't have
stunning places.
Yeah, you don't have much choice, really.
Yeah.
So when you're smashing in a 6.6 on grid, they offer you to stay the night?
No, not quite. I've had lunch offered a few times, but that's a dying art as well.
I must admit, I did have that. I did a job up the back of Wangaratta there, and because it was a fair drive for myself, they said, no need to go home. We got a spare room here. So,
oh, really?
Next minute, I'm sleeping in their house and having a meal with them. The only problem is you feel a bit guilty charging them at the end. They've been so hospitable. Maybe that's their tactic. But anyway.
Angling you for a discount.
Yes, maybe.
So, Alistair, do you train as an apprentice in Warrnambool?
Started my apprenticeship in 2010, straight out of school. Just for a local guy in town, and you know, did my 4-year apprenticeship and 3 or 4 years as an A grade, and then thought, let's go. So just went out on my own and had a crack, and luckily it turned out all right.
So after your 4 years as an apprentice, so 2014, solar started really picking up, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's the size of the system started increasing and things like that. Like early days, we were doing 2 1.5s in a day, and you know, there's before before things were as heavily regulated as they are now. So we used to just breeze through. And
yes. Good old days. I'm shaking my head now.
I remember it again.
That's right. How standards have changed.
That's right, yeah, yeah. And then, yeah. And then they introduced the police like Louis. And
then we became the enemy. But actually, a lot of those early installations would be losing their high feeding tariffs very shortly. So
November.
This year?
Yeah. Oh, wow. I'm one of them.
So yeah.
Losing that.
Better get some batteries.
I will. It's all ready. It's all ready for batteries.
Moved off grid.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know a few people.
That's in this room, isn't it?
So, Alex, why did you make the move to, say, General Electric to doing solar on-grid?
I don't know if this is the answer you want, but we still do 50-50.
Yeah, you're allowed to do it.
We still do 50-50. You know, there's a few builders and things that we work for, mm-hmm. just because... I'm going to give you bad answers.
I mean, you're on a regional centre, so you've got to be diverse.
Yeah,
you've
got to diversify and things like
that. Yeah.
I don't want to say anything bad about solar. It would be hard to keep staff if we did solar 24/7.
Like winter time,
and, you know, like we talk about the early days of solar, we were doing, so there was this local council bulk buy and things like that. We went through that and... we had a list of maybe 1,000 jobs to do, and we used to do 2 a day, 5 days a week, and the apprentices dropped like flies.
It's tough work.
It's hard, you know. You set the ladder up, you know, you grind tiles and things like that, and screw the feed in, and you get in the roof and run the cable, and you got to lift the panels up and things like that. So I've always been of the opinion that when I started my business and employed people, I would keep it 50-50 if I could, near enough. You know, things drop off and levels change and things like that. But and I always think it's important as well, as I have apprentices as well, is you really want to work in General Electrical as well, because they are related, the two. And if you learn one, you don't learn the other. Mm. It's same with, you know, domestic electricians and like house bashing and things like that. Yeah. You go and do something else and you've got no idea because you haven't done it. Like, it may be in the same rule book, but it's different. And I've always been of the opinion that, you know, to do solar well, you have to understand a lot of other things about the electrical trade. And
definitely. And that plays into off-grid as well. I mean, the more diverse your knowledge, the more you can think outside the box when something's a bit quirky or there's a problem to solve. You need that General Electrical as much as you need the grid connector solar, as much as you need all the other training specifically in off-grid. You need all of that to have a really well-rounded knowledge in order to do the job properly. Exactly. So it's really important to have that diverse knowledge.
And it's fine when you're stacking things together. It's when things go wrong that you need that background to fix it.
Yeah.
And that's what I've found as well is because in the city... electrical and data go hand in hand. Like if you're an electrician, you do data. In regional areas, they're separate. So your electricians and you have your data technicians, it's a separate thing. So I've never really known too much about data, but the way that the solar industry has progressed, I've had to really learn it because there's so much involved now. And
it's quite in depth.
Yes.
Gone are the days when people say, it's only a couple of panels and you just put it together and away it goes. But not today.
See the green light?
Yeah, that's right. It's definitely not like that today.
So the move from, you know, bashing in those 1.5s to doing off-grid, what was the big break there?
I've sort of always had a bit of a fascination with off-grid. It might be a bit... a bit of a childish thought, I suppose. I've always thought it was really cool to create a power system. You know, you see transmission lines and things like that, and in electrical trade, we connect to them. Whereas off-grid, you're actually creating that source of electricity. And I've always found that's amazing, that you can go from a house in a paddock in the middle of nowhere to having no services and things like that, and you come along and you get to create the own power station for these properties. And I've always found that's just amazing. Mm. And yeah, I suppose I'd taken an interest in it from there. And you know, thanks for the thanks for the guidance. And yeah, you know, since then, yeah, loved it. Fantastic.
So how did you get your experience? Like, you did a job for Emily?
Yes. I think that first one was in South Australia.
I remember, I'm sorry.
I can't remember.
We first started working with you when you were with some previous businesses. Yes. I reckon that was 2016.
Yes.
And then we followed you to the next place that you went, and then we followed you to your current
location.
Yeah. So I can't remember where that first... where that first job was, but we would have paired you with Paul.
It was Nora Crina near Robe.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just came to me there. Yeah, so I remember that. It was good.
So did Emily just send you out there cold to go and...
Yeah, see ya. Good luck, swim.
Yeah. I suppose it was a good introduction as well, because the way that your systems come down, they're prefabbed, they're tested and things like that. And, you know, it was quite a nice introduction to it.
So Emily did the design.
Yes.
And you did the install.
That's right. Yes. Yep.
So we prefab all of our off-grid systems in our workshop in Adelaide first before sending them out across the country. So like Alex was saying, all of the programming and everything has sort of been done. They're pre-mounted on boards. So they're sort of all ready and packaged up. And so it is a nice sort of smooth introduction into doing it, because a lot of that sort of sitting there programming stuff has been already done for them. And yeah, then it's just a case of getting it all in on site. And,
yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. And you know, you put it all together, and then, you know, that you start to get a bit curious, and you see how things have done, and it's done right in front of you, because you can see how they've all been widened and things like that. So it was a really good introduction. And then, you know, learning from that, you do a couple more and all of a sudden you know how everything works.
Mm. Yeah. Paul would have joined, our head electrician would have joined you for that install, I hope.
No, was it Mark?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So one of our other contractors from Adelaide.
So Alex, now when you get a cold call, you get this phone call from a customer or prospective customer saying, how much is an off-grid system? Right. Mm. How do you respond to that?
Look.
calm down.
It's what, the filmable answer or the not filmable answer?
Yeah. So you go straight to price. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pipe dream for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But once they hear the price, see you later.
So you're trying to work out the tie kickers from those who are
pretty much, yeah, because and there's a lot in, you know, you can knock out a Grid Connect solar quote in 15 minutes, mm-hmm. but off grid, there's a lot more to it. Like, it might take you a good couple of hours, like understanding and things like that, you know, and then of course you need to understand the site that you're dealing with and, you know, load profiling and things like that. So there's a bit to it, and, you know, you don't, for all the, if you quoted every person that called you, you wouldn't do too well.
Yeah, you just waste a lot of time.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you go a lot deeper than you would with a general grid-connected system.
Of course, you don't have the grid to support you. So, and you need to know that sizing the system, it has to be done correctly, because at the end of the day, when things don't work, they don't work. Mm. And
you're getting the phone call.
And people's mobiles still work.
Yes. They know where to find you.
Yes. Yep. So
if you've done your job, mate. Yeah.
So everything has to be done correctly from the start, you know, things have to be sized correctly and expectations have to be managed. Mm. So yeah.
I guess there's a big commitment too to the customer having built the system.
Well, that's right. You're tied with the system. Mm-hmm. You know, you're selling something, you know, you're tied to it. Mm. And they're going to remember that you put it in, and you know, and you don't want anything to go wrong. Mm. I suppose that's the main thing that I've built my business around, is if I don't hear from people again, it's great. You know,
I'm not saying I don't want to talk to anybody ever again, but if you don't hear from anybody again, you've done a good job. And that's what you want. So, and off-grid is probably next level to that. If you don't hear from somebody again after you've done an off-grid system, it's 100% a fantastic result.
Yeah.
Because things are working.
Mm. Cool. So there's kind of like a demarcation, what you've been describing, the electrical work, which you've trained in, and so you're an A grade, done all that. But then there's the design side. Maybe this is a bit of a segue to you, Wade.
Okay.
So Wade, I assume you're not an electrician?
No.
But you design systems. So yes. How did you get into that?
I thought you want to go back.
Let's go back to that car accident.
No, I was born with this accent. So my dad's from Australia, and he went to Canada in the late 60s and for a year, fell in love with skiing and never came back. And I met my mom, and they actually ended up building, this is pertinent, I'm not just telling my life story. They built a ski cabin on Mount Baker, which if you're in Vancouver and you look east, it's the snow-capped volcano. Dormant.
So you can ski on it.
And when my brother and I were 13 and 15, my dad thought a great way to keep us out of teenage stuff is to build another cabin. And he lobbed a How to Wire Your House book onto my lap when I was 13. And he's like, read that, because you're going to be the one wiring up this entire house. And so I did. And I learned, and I, you know, there's definitely a nerd in me that just loves that sort of stuff. And I wired our whole house up, and I kind of fell in love with electrics and how it all worked and the loop of it. And fast forward, moved to Australia in 2010, and ended up in Cairns for 6 months, which turned into 3.5 years, and started working for a solar company up there, and ended up owning my own solar company. And there was nothing more devastating than the crickets of July 1st, 2013, when the feed-in tariff in Queensland stopped. And I realized very quick I needed to diversify.
This was the 44 cents?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it actually ended a year previous, but if you signed up,
yeah,
people, you had a year to install them. And yeah, we were so busy with all the installs that you just kind of forgot about what was next. And it was devastating, to be honest. And so the diversification was very quick, and it was like, okay, we need to start doing commercial, and we need to look at off-grid as well. So not being an electrician, I sent my electrician down to Brisbane to get certified in off-grid, and he came up, and I was just, you know, quoting on tenders. And then we got our first off-grid job, and it was awesome. It was near, just outside of Cooktown, actually.
Remote.
Yeah, very remote. But the fishing up there is great, so we were happy to go. And it was 2 days, and I went up with him, and I helped him with the full install, and I was just, yeah, again, just one of those moments where you're like, wow, exactly what Alex said, where you literally creating power and energy out of nothing, just the sun, and storing it. It was an old Latronics LS, by the way, if you were interested. I can't remember the lead acid batteries, but looking back, I think they were the completely wrong batteries now that I know more about batteries. I think the install was done correctly, but man, yeah, I would have given those batteries 2 years back. I fell in love with off-grid back then. And then, fast forward to 2020, going to work for Supply Partners, and was brought in specifically to not create the off-grid market for Supply Partners, because they already had Andrew Simpson there, who we all know. It was to double down on it, because they saw how much that it was about to become an important part of the wholesale distribution of solar, like batteries were becoming a thing. And off-grid already existed, and Andrew being there and being, he's like a Cellectronic guru, right? He knows, and they were like, okay, we want you to work with Andrew and learn everything that he knows. And I'm like, please, this guy knows so much. And then 6 months later, Cellectronic. Andrew went and worked for them, and he left me all there with 6 months of knowledge. But I quickly picked up, because he was a world of knowledge, and he was a very good teacher, actually. He would teach me quite a bit, all the while I was doing the GES off-grid design for non-electricians certification as well. Mm. So getting to know everything that you needed me to know, and everything that Andrew needed me to know, the both the theory and the practical of both things. And he gave me a really good piece of advice was, and I already kind of knew I was going to do this, is go out and do a few installs. And that's what I did. And that's what I still do today with all of our staff as well. Anybody, all of our salespeople that want to know how to quote and design off-grid, it always starts with, go out with Emily, go out with Alex, go out and just witness it. See how it all goes together. We're all visual learners and kinesthetic too. If you can get your hands in, if they'll let you put your hands in it. It's awesome. And yeah, that's the long thing of how I became an off-grid designer.
So you've actually had specific product training through Andrew and Cellectronic.
Yes, I have. Yeah.
But also standards training through GSES.
Yeah.
So those two kind of had to mesh to be a good designer.
Yeah, they do. And the practicalness of it as well, because in that design course, yeah, there was definitely some practical stuff, but there was no like on-site experience that just can't be replaced. Like, why are you doing that? You're supposed to do it this way on paper and in my brain. And they're like, nah, you can't do it that way. It's got to be this because of this. And you're like, ah, gotcha. And just little things that, yeah, sure, you can read them and write a test and, you know, C, and get a passing mark. But the practical nature of off-grid is that's where everything gets learned, or it gets cemented, really. The knowledge gets cemented out in the field. So, yeah, highly recommend that for anybody that's interested in doing their off-grid design, is make sure that you get at least 5 installs under your belt as well.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Alex. You get that phone call. How much is an off-grid system?
Well, I'm getting that phone call from him. I don't get it from the end user. That's the difference between what I go through and what you guys go through, is I get it from the installers of Australia. Mm. But my answer is no different. It usually starts with something along the lines of, what's the customer's expectations on how much this is going to cost? And, or have they had a quote to see how much it is going to be to bring the grid in?
Yes. Mm. Yep.
Because if we have that number, then we know what our number can be. Mm. And it can even be a little bit more, because you're like, but then you never have to pay for power. Except 10 years down the road when you got to replace batteries. But we'll get to that. But that I have built forms that I usually send out when I get asked. Because the question can be as diverse as, hey, I got a guy who wants to go off-grid. How much is that going to be? To someone probably more like these two, where they just give me a bill of materials. And, or like, hey, here's what I'm thinking. Is this, am I missing anything? Which the answer is usually yes. But that's, and I love it. I love the diversity, because yeah, there's nothing more boring than, you know, working on an assembly line and just punching the same back pan all day. So just having the range of possibilities that are going to come across your desk in any given morning is exciting. And that is design at the end of the day. Like, it's exciting. There's so many things. And like you said about going, you never know whose property you're going to rock up on. You never know what's going to be out there, who you're going to meet. I've gone to an off-grid job before and got there at 7 in the morning. And they're like, oh, there's no hurry. Just come inside. We're having breakfast and out on the patio. And I'm like, absolutely. I could use a feed. Let's do this. And so that's exciting. So that's the design, but install as well. Is it's a, you know, it's a great field to be in, and just that from scratch, creating energy is incredible.
So you still get out in the field?
Whenever I can, yeah. I love being out of the office as well. So if there's a complex job, which are the ones I now like,
yeah,
like exactly what you said, it's the knowledge can get you so far, but it's the experience that gives you that ability to think on outside of the box sometimes, which in off-grid is quite often. Like there, some of these things can be super complex. So the really complex ones, or the outside of the box, or the new, like, oh, we haven't done this before. I love going to those ones.
Yep.
If they're not too far. Like, you know, Marcus Axon from Platypus. He did a great big Selectronic and the new Select Cell job up on the tip of Australia, up at Punsand Bay. Yeah, there's an old RV park there, and they turned it into an actual resort, and it's all off-grid. And that one, I'm like, I will be there. I need to see this thing go in and work, because it's just that interesting. Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's not the easiest place to get to. Yeah.
It's a long way. It's a long drive.
Yeah. I didn't go on the water. I lived in Cairns. I know. It's like 6 months of the year, there's stingers, and the other six, there's crocs. It's like, why am I living here?
Time to go to Brisbane.
There's no bears.
Too right.
Yeah. Oh, the brown bears of BC are pretty, they're just there for your garbage.
I love what you were saying about the variety of stuff that comes across your desk as far as load profiles and system designs, because what I find really interesting about that is you get, with a load profile, you get a little bit of an insight into that person's life and how they live and what they're using and all that sort of stuff. And I find that really fascinating, just seeing the different templates on how different people, live their lives. Mm-hmm. I guess it kind of sounds a bit creepy, but but no, I find that really fascinating that, you get all of these different, whether it's residential homes or businesses or, all the different designs and load profiles that you can, play with.
It reveals a lot about how people think that the system's going to work as well.
Yeah.
They're either honest in what they're going to use.
I was going to say, what factor, what BS factor do you add into their? Well, we only use this.
It's probably like, if the usage is quite high, they're probably honest with what they're doing. Or they're sort of building in a bit of, what's the word? Contingency.
Yeah.
So how do you go with like future proofing? Like obviously everyone on those type of properties, being larger properties, they probably may be using it as a farm maybe, or they are going to expand on their loads. How do you
quite honest with that too. They say, look, this is just this, but we're planning on adding a whole new line of X, or we're adding, you know, a spa down the road.
Mm.
They know it's cheaper to do it the first time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you give them either one of you or three of you or four. do you give them a capability of expansion on it, that you give a bit of a percentage that they can go over it, or they...
You can talk about possibilities.
Possibilities.
It's, yeah. So
in the end, it's all about the dollars in the end.
It really is. Individual circumstances, really. It's... What products are you using? Where do they sit within that particular design that you've got? Yeah, you just talk about here's the design options, and here's the capability of expanding with these or not with these different options, I guess.
Yeah, too right. Yeah, because certain products, they can't expand.
Mm.
Yeah.
You got to add not a easily. Whole second system.
Whereas a lot of people just go, there are the panels.
Yeah,
put 20 more. Next to them,
right? Just in case.
They're literally free.
That's why panels are
not. They're so cheap.
Like the old days, wasn't it?
PV modules were so expensive, but yeah, now modules are there.
Especially with STCs, absolutely. Yeah. Put more on, for sure.
Please stop asking me about wind turbines. Yeah. Get more panels instead.
Yeah. As we listen to the wind just crack.
Oh, yeah.
But that Alex poses the next problem down the line, because you know we do work backwards.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, how much energy do we need? Okay, how much will the panels produce?
Hmm.
If you put 20 more panels, okay, then I need another inverter. Oh shit, now I've just exceeded the 2-to-1 ratio.
Yeah.
Oh, now we need another one of these. Sorry, those 20 extra panels just cost you $10,000.
It's an expansion.
And did you want to store it?
Yeah. And then you've got to put in that, you know, if it's got an interactive generator, the size of that generator to the size of your system as well.
So exactly. It sounds like you're saying there's a lot of interconnectivity in design.
Yeah.
You can't just treat elements in isolation. I've got a general question to you, which is, do you end up providing advice to the customer about the way they use energy as opposed to just designing the system?
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. And just given the amount of load profiles we've seen over the years and the different appliances that people have, our designers have a pretty good idea of maybe don't choose that particular appliance, or here's an option that might be more efficient, or there's always conversations about energy efficiency.
Resistive hot water. What I find too is how exciting and smart products are becoming these days. So you do have the ability to go, okay, well, if you still want that, we can put it on a PV only, or we can add some sort of diverter, or what, you know, the use of energy these days is almost as important as every other piece of knowledge, because we're moving into an age of smarts where a solar business is no longer just solar. They're an energy business, and it's all about how you use it, how you can store it, how you can divert it, how you can make it as efficient as possible. Then that will set these people apart from everyone else who's coming in and giving the same quote.
Mm.
And it just makes you look smarter. It makes you look like you know what you're talking about. And sales is all about, can person trust you?
Yes. So what I'm hearing for you, Wade, is that
off-grid design is about a holistic approach. It's not like this product is for you and that's it.
It's not a one-size-fits-all. It really isn't. It you have to be able to have a holistic approach, absolutely, and tailor it to that person, their budget, and how they're going to use it, and what their plans are in the future. Exactly everything that we've been talking about. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe going back to you, Alex, just thinking of what we just discussed, how does that differ from when you were an apprentice electrician, maybe a house smasher, you know, putting in PowerPoints? How do you feel about the off-grid world as a contrast to general electrical work?
There's a lot more to it. So it's, I think there's so much in the electrical trade that you can understand and you can learn. Like, you learn every day, whereas, you know, if you're going around doing the same jobs and things like that, you just become a bit of a brain dead monkey. But off grid, nothing is the same. Like, every person lives different lives, and we're there to build something that's going to suit that life. And you learn new things every day, and that's why it's important to have people to lean on as well. Like, if you're not sure, you can call Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Wade will give his input. You can call Emily. She'll have a different input. And, you can call your inspector if you're not sure.
We totally don't.
No, there's a...
worrying about, is it safe?
And there's an important layer to that as well, is leaning on your inspector, because you can have all the ideas in the world, but if it doesn't comply, you're up shit creek.
Mm-hmm. So, that's right. So we, as inspectors, we're not saying, is the system going to work efficiently? Is it going to have the correct yield? Is it going to do this? We're not interested in that. Right. We're just interested, is it safe for the customer? Mm-hmm. Our responsibility is to look after the customer and say, is it safe to connect?
Yeah. And
that's why we
and
be signing on.
I think as an electrician as well, if you have an inspector that's fluent in, you know, off-grid and things like that, you know, you do the job. Of course, you want it to be safe, but you've got the inspector's got your back because he's going to come through and check everything. And then if you know that your inspector is all over it, you have nothing to worry about.
That's what I found really good about, because we do installs in all states and territories. Having the inspectors in Victoria and have every single one of our jobs in Victoria be inspected and checked over has improved all of our other designs for everywhere else. So that's been really fabulous that we're learning all the time from the input from inspectors.
And we're learning at the same time. Don't ever think that the inspectors have got the answers to everything. Yeah. We sit in the books, compliance, and the way the rules and regulations are written. But when it comes to design, and sometimes we might look at something that you've put together and we're thinking, okay, where is the circuit diagram? How is this put together? We need to start understanding what you've actually done. And then our heads going around in circles, just trying to make sure, have we missed anything?
Yeah.
And it's just a self-check.
Yeah.
It's and you're right with what you just said, because I've done quite a few interstate trips and a lot of the other states are actually very supportive of what we're doing in Victoria. And as we discussed before, but may come up in my little bit of a talk, but Victoria itself, similar to the ACT in some ways, we just recently this year created a renewable license endorsement for inspectors. So we need to be extra endorsed in inspecting solar batteries or combustion generators as well. So I have the full RE, which means I can do the whole lot when it comes to standalone. Not all inspectors have that.
That's right. Yeah.
So but we're evolving. We're evolving, no different to you guys. We're learning at the same time.
Yeah.
You never stop learning.
So, Louis, we've gone sort of like deep with each person. Before we dive into why you're an electrical inspector, how did you sort of start your electrical career? Like, when did it start?
Look, now I'm going to show my age. I am getting very close to that 60, just turned 59, but I started when I was 16, so in the electrical industry. But being fortunate, I do come from a family of electricians. So my father's an electrician, my brother, myself, and now my son. So we've gone through now into the third generation.
I just made some Christmas dinners. Right.
yes, and it doesn't help because you know what it's like when you get a group of electricians in one room. It's very difficult. It's no different here. You can't keep us quiet. You know, there's so many things to talk about in our.
It's a sign that he actually enjoys his job.
Yeah, and I do. And to be honest, that's why I went into inspecting. A few inspectors that I knew pushed me. They said, "Look, Lewis, you'll be a great inspector. You're patient with people. You understand the way the rules are written." And that's a bit of a challenge, we know, because there's a bit of an interpretation with many of the rules. But it's also how you communicate with people and how you interact. Want that person that you're talking to, whether if it's an electrician or contractor, to improve themselves, better themselves, workmanship, and give them that guidance. Yes, I don't know everything, but there's no one that does. So you're working together. Yes, I became the only one that decided to become an inspector in the family. But look, I do.
Sounds like becoming a priest, you know.
Yeah, making that decision of being the one that you're going to suddenly
get.
Well, yes, that can be that way. You've got to be very careful how you fight your the fights and stuff. You've got to be very. But you also have to be respected. So a lot of things in life, and it doesn't matter if you're an electrician or in a business like yourself, Wade, it's all boils down to respect. And if you're a person that doesn't naturally get angry, but you're very accurate and decisive on your approach, you'll find that most of your clients or the people you talk to actually respect your decisions. It doesn't mean that you're always right, but they know that they're comfortable talking it over with you, and that would apply to anybody here that's in a business. if you don't know something, the best thing you can say to someone, oh, I'm not sure on that, but I'll check it up for you. Or I'll talk to somebody that that may know. It's that relationship that you build, and that's no different in inspecting.
Can you be both? Can you be an inspector and run an electrical contract business?
Yes.
I've always thought as an inspector it would be very rewarding, like if you start, you know, inspecting for an electrician, and then you can see like behaviours changing and adapting. Mm. You know, they may not be compliant to the rules. That's, and
you actually hit the nail on the head there, because a lot of people that I was when I first went into it, you develop a relationship and you sort of feel, oh look, they could improve on themselves, their knowledge, their understanding of the way the rules are written. If we turn up to a job and they've completely evolved through your teachings, when you get to their job, everything, you just go through your normal process of inspecting, but you'll find that you spend less time there because everything's tick, 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 tick. You may see some other things compared to the other guy that's might be new to the industry and he's got defects everywhere.
Yeah.
Do they get a discount?
No. Just that's us getting paid for all the previous hard work that we've put in. and there's a lot of there's a lot of unpaid work. I'm not being negative on the inspecting, but there's a lot of work that we do after hours in documenting jobs where there may be defects, because you might send them an email and say, you've got to fix this, and this is why.
I guess you picked up on something about doing solar battery installs compared to general electrical work. I mean, the wiring rules, we've had it for, I don't know, when it was first written.
Yeah.
Well, it
actually goes back to the English system.
It doesn't change a lot. It just gets tweaked. But the solar industry changes every few years. It's a new world.
Well, we go back, I used to install solar as well. So, but going back to the... What year was it? 2005, was it? That book, the first one of the first
ones? Yep, 2005.
It was 2005, yeah. Yep. Testing my brain. But it was not many pages in it.
No.
It was only, you know, you could just flick through 20 pages and that's your solar standard. And now... And the books have got more thicker and thicker and thicker. Look, it's... But that's only in a period of, what are we, 24? So that's a period of only 15 years. Imagine if AS3000 went through that type of change. It just...
Unless you work in New Zealand, where you're still stuck in 20-year-old standards.
They're a bit different over there, isn't it? But I don't know all their requirements there, but I worry about...
You've got to keep old copies of your standards.
Old copies, yeah.
2012 edition.
Oh, we still keep old copies because you can still... repair in Victoria to the old standards, but you can't do an alteration. So
what would define an alteration?
Anything that you change. So a repair, if you alter the so now I'm going to go into the way the standards are written. So when you look at alterations, a lot of people don't understand what an alteration is, but you've got to look at the definition of what an alteration is in AS3000. And when you look at the definition, it says it's a modification to parts or part of that electrical installation. Once you've modified it, more current, or you've moved it, or you've done something.
Oh, so current, voltage, power, and location.
It's all modification.
It's all modification.
Which means it's an alteration.
And topology?
Topology is a very good word, because I was only had that discussion yesterday. A guy was changing an inverter over. So my first question is, what topology was it? And he reckons, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you may be replacing...
Was it heavy?
It wasn't heavy. Well, that's probably... Actually, I probably should have gone down that path. Was it heavy? Yes. And that would definitely tell you that it's a transformer base. But I said, so is it a transformer base or transformerless? And he was asking the questions. What do you mean? And then I said, well, if you're changing it from a transformer base to a transformerless, you suddenly started a whole... it's no longer just a direct replacement. Now it becomes a total alteration. You're probably better off just ripping the whole system off the roof and just put a new installation in, because we all know with the earthing requirements, the DC isolator ratings, everything could be wrong when you change the topology. So, and that's very important for us inspectors to make that clear to anyone that asks that.
So that's
question.
What we haven't talked about in the off-grid is doing upgrades. So you come along, do an upgrade, and it's someone else's job. You know, what are the challenges?
Extreme, because if you're just doing a straight repair, say like an inverter failed or a few switch failed or whatever, and you're just replacing that only, and that complied at the time it was initially installed, you can replace that one component and not a problem in that same location. Because all you're doing is giving it back to where it was at the time it was installed. Mm. But if you change the actual the way it's written or the way it's designed, then it becomes like a new installation.
Let me give you an example. The batteries are 15 years old. They've had it. So the customer says, I want new batteries. What do you do?
You need to meet the current standard of 5139.
Right, because it's an alteration.
It's an alteration.
Yeah.
You can ask in Victoria, you can ask for exemptions to the way the rules are written. Generally, the regulator will look upon, does it have the same safety outcome? If it hasn't got the same safety outcome, it won't become exempt.
Right.
From any standard.
Yep. So that's a call by the regulator.
It is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But that costs you money to do that.
Yeah.
Of course.
All right.
Not much, but it's sometimes. But it can be worthwhile to ask for an exemption.
Mm-hmm.
But then they'll look over it with a fine tooth comb, and generally in that type of situation, I can't see it coming through.
Right.
Because it wouldn't have the same safety outcome.
Cool. Well, enjoy hearing your journey. So actually, this is kind of a transition to Emily. You actually have to deal with all the states.
Yes.
Not just your home state.
Yes, absolutely.
What's that like?
It varies. Every state is very different Even within a state is quite different. I mean, New South Wales, for example, is a very large area, lots of different geographical conditions, lots of different pain points for different customers in each of those locations. And so you kind of have to approach it differently for not only each state, but each location within that state as well. So it's, it's good though. I mean, because we specialise just in off-grid, we had to spread ourselves fairly widely geographically in order to meet that niche in all of those areas. So that was the idea behind it. But it's fabulous. I love it. I love that we get to work in so many places and so many locations.
Do you get to go there?
Not as often as I want to. I'm mainly in our office in Adelaide, but actually just coming here today, I've come from one of our projects in Swan Hill, so I managed to get myself involved in that one. It's the first one I've been out on site for a long time, so it's wonderful. I love it. I love getting out on site and getting my hands dirty and shifting panels around, and it's wonderful, but most of the time I'm stuck in the office.
So before we broke for some food, Emily, we were starting to talk a bit about your journey. Now, off-grid energy, how long have you been with off-grid energy?
We started, so there's a founding four of us,
yep.
And we started in February of 2011. So the four of us were actually working for a different solar company, and they had decided that they were going to close their off-grid department and focus on grid solar. And we weren't so keen on that, and so decided that we would go and start off-grid energy. Took their blessing and a few leads and started the company with the four of us.
So. Where was that?
February of 2011 was when it was officially registered, but we'd been sort of working towards it in the latter part of the previous year. So, that's sort of how we started. Yeah.
So you mentioned leads. How did you make that transition? Like, they were getting all the leads before, and then they folded. How did it move to you?
Yeah, well, we were pretty lucky to have a handful of customers that would have been left high and dry by not having
off-grid through that company anymore. So that was actually a pretty good start to have that sort of given to us as a kickoff. And I guess, I mean, one of the things that we really discussed in the first, well, before we started the business was what do we call ourselves? Do we go for something that is a reflection on the four of us as people, or do we go for literal? And we went obviously with the latter. And I think that's definitely served us well in that we just say what we do. And that has definitely helped as far as having our website, people looking for what they need when they need an off-grid system, and hopefully coming and finding us.
It's a very simple thing that's allowed your expansion too.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was tricky in the start, actually, because we did have a massive list of names for the company. But at the time, I think it was standalone power was the key sort of phrase for this area, I think, because of the training. I think that was the list of the course that you could do to become an installer. And yeah, we threw around a lot of different names and ended up with this one. So yeah, I think that definitely serves us well as far as bringing leads in via the website just naturally. And referrals as well is a huge one for us. You do a good job for one house on a street and fingers crossed they talk to their neighbours. So yeah.
Word of mouth.
Yeah.
Cheapest form of advertising.
Yeah. And it's also the best. Doing a really good job for someone and having them come back and say, you guys did great, and I'm telling my neighbour that that you should help them too. That's huge. That's such a high is getting that compliment from them. Because, you know, giving a referral for a company, it's a risky business when you're referring something to family and friends. Mm. You want to know that who you're referring is going to do a good job, or it reflects on you as a person. So I love that. That's the biggest compliment I could ever get.
I suppose if you work in a regional area, that gets around pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely.
So does bad news.
No, yes.
Forces you to do the right thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, Emily, were you naturally in the electrical world? Where did you start your career?
Not at all. I came completely by chance into this industry. Yeah. I had finished a performing arts course and was in desperate need of a job just to pay rent and eat food. And so I happened to know someone through that world that was working for a solar company and needed to fill an open job position, and that was that. I thought, great, I'll earn some cash and save the world at the same time, and yeah, things just kind of snowballed from there. Once I was in, that was it. I just loved it. The people I was working with and the ethos of the renewable energy industry and all of that just aligned with everything that I love. And yeah, that was it. I was hooked.
So how did you learn the ropes?
Osmosis. Mm-hmm. I think when I started, I kind of did every job that just needed to be done. Mm-hmm. Any task that was open and needed someone to do it, I just put my hand up and did it. And that meant that I ended up working in pretty much every department in that particular company. And I think that just meant that I got a really good understanding of all the different parts of the solar business and how that works and how valuable each of those roles is. And like you were saying earlier, getting out there, getting your hands dirty and understanding in real terms what that role needs, and what that does. So having done all of those different parts, I think, yeah, I just absorbed anything and everything that I could. And I think just through sheer length of time, I ended up with the knowledge that I have, I guess.
So off-grid energy, from what you've just said before, have pre-built systems.
Yeah.
Which is a bit different than, say, a bespoke system that you build for a customer on site. What's the reason for going that approach?
There's a few. So we a couple of reasons. Quality assurance. If we can build all of our systems in-house, then we know that once it gets to site, there's no software glitches. Everything's been done exactly how we know it's been done. So there's, definitely a quality assurance aspect to it. Also, speed of installation on site. And we can get something happening, a standard off-grid system, for want of a better term, can be up and running in a day and a half on site, which is nice and speedy for the customer. And it really streamlines our process that we can be building systems in our warehouse while other installations are happening on site. So it really helps to speed up that process as well.
I guess it helps with the contractor at the other end too.
Yeah, definitely. If we're bringing on, if we're using a subcontractor in that particular area for the first time or their first couple of installs, it definitely makes it a lot easier for them because a lot of that programming and all of that has been done for them. And so with all of the instructions, and obviously we usually send out one of our in-house guys to help them on, especially on their first one, to really be able to trust that install has happened exactly how we want it to happen, and also give them a really good idea of how we work, and everything's beautifully neat and well presented, and comes up looking pretty sweet.
You must have a fairly cumbersome site survey process, hey? Like more than usual, because you're building something that has to fit into something almost.
Yeah. Well, we've got a couple of different options in the way that we can pre-build systems. Okay. So the most common one is pre-built on boards, which can fit to most sort of shed or enclosure walls. And obviously, depending on the size of the system, depends on how many boards you've got.
Yeah.
We've also got some pre-built sort of a canopies that we can build into as well if they don't have a shed or anything. But usually they've got an equipment shed on the property before the house is even there.
Yeah.
And we can just bang the system in the shed and solar either on the roof of the shed or on a ground mount next to it. And they're all ready to go for when the house gets built. We also provide 3D imagery of the system designed for that customer. So the customer gets full dimensions of, like, here is your system that we've designed for you. Here's what it looks like in 3D form. Here's the dimensions of the room that you need to build.
Yep.
Please stick to those dimensions. So they get a really detailed description of what to expect and what to have ready for us if they are providing that for us to build into. So I think that's usually pretty handy for them to do that.
You said that you give it these projects to possibly subcontractors. At the end of it, do you go and visit the final
in
to make
most
sure
cases,
that you're happy with the way it was installed or the way to keep your name?
Yeah. Obviously there's we always ask for 1,001 photos on top of the STC photos that are needed as well. But most of our contractors we've been using since day one, almost. So we're extremely comfortable with how they go. But yeah, if we do use a newbie to us, then we will we'll often send out one of our in-house guys to oversee that and say, look, this is how we like things to be done, and help them out on that first one. And our team, anyone in our team is always on the phone, available on the phone to any of our subbies if they ever need to chat something through or there's something quirky that's happened or whatever.
Good support system.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And that benefits everyone, not only the subby on site. That benefits us because we get it done how we want it done. We know that there's the risk associated with not having the installation done properly is gone because we've looked after that. And the end customer, of course, as well, because they get it how it needs to be. Also, when something goes wrong down the track, if there's ever a question or a fault, or especially when there's something that we haven't seen before, I know the guys will be on the phone to Alex. Alex will be on the phone to us. We're constantly chatting to all of our sort of network to nut out this problem. Hey, mate, have you seen this happen before? What do you reckon? Which is really great as well.
Always looking for a solution.
Totally.
And in the end, that's what the customer's looking for.
Yeah. And that's what you need in off-grid as well. Not only do you need to be available 24/7 to pick up that phone if something goes wrong, because you are the essential service for that person, you need to act quickly. You need to, if something is wrong and they, well, the worst case is they don't have power, you need to act immediately to get that fixed. And usually it's a quick fix. It's a stick some fuel in your generator and turn your system back on. But if it is something more serious and then it needs further investigation, you need to be able to work really fast to get that fixed.
Difference to the way a distributor works. Because if you call up a distributor that you've lost power, but they're not going to say, oh, we'll be there in 2 weeks' time. Absolutely. No, they're going to come straight away.
Yeah.
Because there could be quite severe safety issues. Yeah, why absolutely. It doesn't... why it's lost power.
And big fines for loss of power.
Yes.
Yes.
And they have fines, but in the end, you're there to provide that service and give them power back.
Absolutely.
Which is no different to a distributor, but you're playing now that role.
Yeah. We are their distributor, essentially. Yes. And, I mean, we don't get huge fines, but we are the person at the other end of the phone who has that reputation on our name and our shoulders. And believe you me, that's enough to work as fast as you possibly can to get that resolved. Yeah. Absolutely.
Things go wrong all the time, but it's how you react to things like that that people remember. And that's always true with manufacturers as well.
Yeah.
There are always going to be things that go wrong, but it's the support you receive when they do go wrong that you're going to remember.
Absolutely. I remember our very first serious failure. Many, many years ago now, and it was after five on a Friday, of course.
Yeah,
of course. And a component had failed completely, and we were on the phone to the manufacturer. They had a replacement sent out. It left, like someone was magically still in the office. They had it sent out that night. To the location. We managed to get someone there the very next morning. So they only had one night of generator run. And we got it up and running by lunchtime the next day. And I was like, yes, that's how you do it.
Unfortunately, the best case scenario is your first.
We set the bar pretty high. Yeah.
But the customers remember that. That's where you get those referrals and everything. It's all about service, isn't it? Mm-hmm. What you do, it's all about service.
There are no problems, absolutely. Only opportunities.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure sometimes it costs you money to provide that service.
Yes, it does. It really does. And that's why it's really important to not jump in on this race to the bottom for pricing. You have to price your system knowing that this is a 10-plus year investment in this customer and you will have costs further down the track. Mm-hmm. And you need to include that in your pricing first up. That's really important because otherwise you're not going to be sustainable as a business. Mm-hmm. You need to think long term because that's what off-grid is. It's a long-term investment for you and the customer.
Yeah, you're not doing right by yourself or the customer.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no point doing installing a system for absolutely no margin at all. And have your company go under in the next 12 months, and then the customer's got no one to rely on. Who are they going to then? So, yeah, you're right. It's does no one any favours.
How do you communicate that to a customer when they say, oh, I've had a quota, it's half the price of yours?
It's hard. It's really hard because we can tell them blue in the face that, you know, we've had 13-plus years of experience of this. We know what this does. We know what cutting corners will do. You will pay for it. It won't be good for you. And either they listen to you or they don't. And if they don't, they're probably not the right customer for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny. We actually.
Thank you. Right? Sometimes you just gotta say thank you.
Absolutely. And we have said no to people because they weren't the right customer for us. We vet them as much as they vet us because. Yeah. We're the ones taking that phone call at 3 a.m. And if they've been disengaged in the design process or not taken responsibility for their load profiling or any of that, that's a massive red flag that you are going to be the one phoning us week on, week out. Mm-hmm. with problems that aren't problems because you haven't been engaged. And I don't need that personally. I have my own life, and I don't need to be taking on that extra responsibility if you're not going to take on any responsibility.
So you actually qualify the customer.
Yeah, we do. It's informal, yeah. But yes, absolutely. We've said no to people who weren't right for us.
Do you get any customers that did go with that cheaper option and then 12 months later they apologise for not using you, or they want you to fix something that's not good?
Apologies usually not forthcoming. It takes a
big person to do
bit that. Of a sheep. Yeah, we have definitely got people who've, they won't say that they came to us previously, but we've got, obviously their name in our system from the quote that they'd received previously, and it comes up to say that this person has spoken to us before and
you say, I told you so.
Amber alert.
No. Well, interestingly, because obviously they're coming back to us with a system that's not
performing.
It's not performing. It's not doing the job that it needs to. And you know, there's a thousand reasons why that system is not. You know, it's been designed poorly or installed poorly or the wrong product, or, you know, there's a thousand reasons it could be not doing the job. And it's interesting, we're talking about expanding and working on systems future, that aren't yours.
Future-proof.
And we are really risk-averse when it comes to touching other people's work. We get a lot of phone calls from people saying, I have an installation, it doesn't matter how many years old, and we need some work done on it. And majority of the time we will say, oh, look, I'm sorry, we'd prefer not to. Or if it's relevant to that customer, we say, well, in this case, we would remove that system and put in a new one. Because, you know, once we touch that system, we inherit their phone calls.
Changing old systems, it's who takes responsibility. Yeah. The last person does.
Yeah, absolutely. And we,
especially after all the standard changes, up to that point too.
But even beyond the standards, I mean, we have a responsive service team. And so if we're answering the phone and their other company isn't, they're going to ring us first, whether it's something to do with us or not. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that to my service guys because they've got enough to handle. Yeah. And so, it's a really tricky area. Obviously, we want to help these people. We don't want to leave them high and dry. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard where that boundary lies and how you take on that responsibility in a way that's not going to hurt you.
You just give them Alex.
pass the buck. He'll solve it.
No, I like Alex too much.
It's been you this whole time, isn't it?
Ask him about his lead generation. Emily Scraps. I'm curious as to, like, it's very, very important in every aspect of life to know what it is you want. And you guys have developed that for yourself. Was were your go no goes and how you qualify people something that came straight out of the gates in 2011, or is that over time?
We got burnt in various ways by customers or in various ways, and we learned not to go there again. Yeah. We've still got customers that have systems that we didn't install, and we, you know, expanded part of the solar or did something relatively minor, didn't touch the rest of it, and we now take their service calls. We take on that in that case, we've definitely taken that on, and that's just how it is now. We don't, you know, begrudge that at all, but we learned from that. Mm-hmm. And we've changed what we do to fit that. Generally speaking, we've been a relatively risk-averse management team, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. I think there's been times where we haven't sort of acted fast enough on things because we've been a bit risk averse, but I think it's because of the inherent risk in off-grid. Mm-hmm. You need to be a bit risk averse to save your own skin a lot of the time, and to have a long standing sustainable business.
And that can come down to product as well. Like
100%.
Yeah.
It sounds like quality matters.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every single part of what you do, quality matters.
If you go to somebody else's installation and you see plug, it's electronic on the wall, and you say, we've got something to work with here. Like, we have an excellent product to work with here. Whereas if you see something else, like an unknown brand.
Shiny.
Yeah. Mm. You say, well.
No thanks, see you later.
Mm, maybe not.
Any business, it's.
Because, Steve, when we had our contracting business, honesty is always the best policy. It's a saying, but even if people don't like the honest answer, it gives them time to think about it. And sometimes they come back to you because they realise that you are honest.
And they do. We've a couple of our consultants have been in the industry long enough to have that honesty and say no to customers. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, they come back and they say, no, actually, we do want to go with you because you've been honest and you've communicated fairly with us. And that's a sign of trust. Mm. And it's a sign that you know what you're doing. Mm. So it can be beneficial.
And then you develop that good relationship with the customer because they've actually acknowledged that they respect you and respected who you are and what you stand for.
Yeah, absolutely.
As I mentioned before, you know, even in inspecting, respect is a big part of for anyone in business. So.
Can I ask you the question I asked? It's about everyone here. How do you quote?
Well, it all starts with load profiling. That's how long is a piece of string? When they come to you and they say, I want an off-grid system, you have to start with the load profile because nothing else matters, really. You've got nothing to work with unless you know what their loads are. And so that's step one. Go through the load profile, work out exactly what needs powering. And then the team goes through and designs the system to suit, picking the right products, picking the right design, talking to the customer about whether they have young kids now and teenagers later and therefore are going to need a bigger system later on, or, whether they're going to put on house extensions or expand their business or all of those things. A bit of the energy efficiency chat as well. And then it's a case of going, okay, well, here's the design that suits what you need. Where does that sit with your cost to connect to the grid? Where does that sit with your budget? And then just continuing that conversation from there. And that conversation happens over months. Off-grid is a long-term thing. They're probably at the start of their house build if it's a residential off-grid. They've come to us for the quote to go, okay, that's how much my power system's going to cost. And then they'll disappear for a period of time while they're doing all their other things to work out their house build. And then they'll come back to you and say, okay, I'm ready. And then off we go.
It took me 9 months to say yes, and now I want it in 9 days.
Yes, yeah.
And then you see the plans of the house, and they've just doubled their house.
Yes, and all of a sudden they have on-floor heating and a three-phase air conditioner and
a cold plunge.
And a welder in the, yeah.
Because we want to be healthy for 3 weeks.
Well, look, I'm aware that one of you has to catch a plane soon, so we should start to think about wrapping.
Got a half hour.
You got a bit more time?
Half hour.
Yep. Half hour. Okay, good. So, look, this is probably a general question to all of you: is what advice would you give to a young person thinking of going into the off-grid market? Let's say they're young electrician, out of their time, they've done a few, started a small business. What advice would you give to them?
Yeah, I would definitely lean on the experience of what Emily just described about knowing the type of customer you want to work with. I think that's extremely important because you're going to spend a lot of time marketing and putting your energy, of which is limited, into a certain type of person. And if you can profile that person and become an expert in that and know exactly who you want to work with, that is powerful because it's just as important to not work with certain people as it is to work with certain people. And the other piece of advice that she gave was a performing arts degree can still be useful.
It has come in handy, yes.
Yeah,
Alex?
Probably just lean on people around you who have had experience. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's how I learned. And, mm-hmm. you know, you build a network and things like that. And you would rather learn from advice from others than through your own stuff ups. Mm-hmm. Mm. And if you can listen and learn from other people's stuff ups, you know, that's better than making them yourself.
Right. So mentoring.
Exactly right. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There's a lot of experience and advice out there, and you need to ask questions to learn mm-hmm. and ask a few more.
Doesn't mean those stuff ups aren't going to happen.
That's right. But if you can avoid them, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh, that's what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a bit different when it happens to you as opposed to hearing it in third person.
I was sort of brought up in that semi-rural regional, but I would just say know your customers, respect them as that they, you know, even the new ones that may enter into that rural setting or wherever it is, it's generally rural, understand their needs and respect. If you're going to start into it, as you mentioned, the mentoring, I believe, is a big thing. If you need to learn, spend that time with somebody that's done it before, even if that's away from your area. So if you're working in a particular region in Victoria, it wouldn't be a bad idea to make a connection with somebody that's away from the area, that's not in opposition to you. So you go out on site, learn a bit from them, and then apply that in your area.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think people that are generally, that are genuine within the industry and are very passionate, don't have a trouble to mentor someone else.
No.
Well, I suppose if you can... Speaking from probably Emily's point of view, if you can pass on a bit of knowledge that prevents these ordinary systems out there ever being in existence,
yeah.
you're going to do it every day of the week.
Absolutely, yeah. Because having so many people having bad experiences with off-grid systems puts a stain on everything.
That's right.
It makes off-grid seem not as accommodating and the aim instead of... the good experiences that all customers should have having their off-grid system installed. Exactly.
Starting a business, which you guys would know, is that you don't use the products that are going to fail.
That's right.
You'll go with products like Selectronic you know, those type of products that you know you've got the backing and it's not going to fail.
Hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I would suggest to someone coming into the industry is to look after themselves. Off-grid can be quite taxing when you get a phone call from a customer at 3 o'clock in the morning and they're out at their shed, they're in their jocks, it's freezing and their power's gone out. They're emotional, they are unhappy.
I have an image in my head.
I know exactly what looks like. Some white fronts.
How would I approach it hopping out of my vehicle? Seeing this person.
I had one guy the other week call me and he was in the shower and the power cut out and so the water stops. He's in the shower and it was pitch black. he said he had no towel.
At least she had jocks on.
That's right.
What do I do?
Yeah.
You know, the service
call me a few names.
The service side of things and the after-sale support in off-grid, it can be taxing, and it's over the life of the system, so it's over a long term. And so if you're getting, you know, once you get quite a few off-grid systems under your belt, that's a lot of customers that could be phoning you for big or little reasons, and all of those take time and all of those take your energy and your emotional output as well. And so I think for someone who's looking to get into it, so rewarding. But look after yourself. Make sure you've got the boundaries in place that keep your mental health and everything for yourself safe and protected.
Mm-hmm.
And make sure that you can last the distance as much as your business can, as much as the system can, because you are the one taking that phone call. And so look after yourself is probably the biggest piece of advice I reckon I'd give.
That's actually a really unique selling proposition if you were to, not obviously that speech, but something similar like that. Like when someone says, how come you're $15,000 more than this person? And you say, that's because I've worked this into it.
Mm.
And it's really for their benefit just as much as yours. And if they Absolutely. Can respect that, again, going back to your customer, that's the type of customer you want.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are they buying a once-off system and no support after that? Well, I guess that's kind of one cost. Yep. But are they buying power for the life of the system?
Mm-hmm.
And that involves direct contact with the company for 10 years or whatever. That's a cost. That's support. That's people. That's
There's overheads there.
Yeah.
From a design perspective, to answer your question, because you're like, what would you say to people getting into this industry? And we're talking about installers, but from designers, it's rewarding. It's a great little niche to have as well. There, I work with a lot of salespeople in distribution and even within businesses out there. Designers are needed, and you don't have to be an electrician these days. Like, we have New Energy Training, there's GSES, there's many training people out there. All you need now is that electrical principles, and then you can take an off-grid design course. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, for $4,000 in 3 months, bang, it's done. You're there. And you're bringing value immediately to a company that wants to get into that space.
Mm.
Or, you know, you're a contractor, a gun for hire.
And there's brilliant training organizations out there who are doing these courses. And, you know, I went through and got my SAPS accreditation at the end of last year. And it was one of the best things I've ever done. It was really valuable. It was really great.
Yeah, it helps with the imposter syndrome too, hey?
Huge, huge. And
it really does.
That, especially being a woman in this industry, I have to say, one of the biggest drivers for me for getting it was to say to not only other people but also to myself, no, I do know this information.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm talking about, and here's a certificate to prove it.
I'm accredited. Yeah. That it's just those that little
that
word
number.
Just gives you that confidence to
100%. Highly recommend.
Cool.
I want to talk a bit about the change in the market, into the off-grid market. Now, Emily, having been in the market for 10 years now.
13, almost 14.
14, wasn't doing my sums very well then.
Time flies.
Have you seen, like, is the off-grid market shrinking, growing, not changing?
Oh, definitely changing. Definitely. I think my first major experience with the change in the market was in 2009 when the RRPGP rebate was taken out, and that certainly dulled things for some time, but then things have certainly just, I think, organically grown since then. One thing I found really interesting is the use of the term off-grid. Back in those days, off-grid was off-grid, and it meant you had a backup generator and you were completely disconnected. Whereas now I find the term off-grid being used in sort of popular knowledge as meaning anything from true off-grid to basically a grid-connected system, but they're autonomous apart from having the grid as the backup instead. And so that's been an interesting shift in just popular culture, really. I don't have to explain what I do to people anymore when they ask what I do as a job. When I say I provide off-grid power, they're like, oh yeah, I know what that is, and you know, my brother lives off-grid, or you know, it's so much more well known and understood now. And it's definitely changed from a necessity, from a want, from a necessity to a want. People 10 years ago, they had their properties and they needed off-grid power to have any kind of power. These days, people are buying properties that are off-grid in order to have off-grid power.
On purpose.
100%. Energy independence is huge.
Yeah.
And that choice has become available to a lot more people now as well because of the technology change that we've had over the last decade. It's made, you know, larger systems possible for a cheaper price, and that means it's opened it up to a lot more people to be able to afford it. Mm. And yeah, so it's made it much more accessible as well, which has made it much more popular.
So are you seeing off-grid like competing with a grid connection on a new build in terms of cost?
Yeah, I think it depends on the region. Mm-hmm. I think different areas of Australia have different scenarios. Certainly there are pockets where the distributor wants nothing to do with hooking this house up. Mm-hmm. And so they will price it accordingly. And therefore you've got a lot to, hundreds of thousands. I've actually seen $1 million from a quote from a distributor to connect to this house. And they could see the pole from where their property is. Like, yeah, it's absurd. I think it depends on the location.
Why? Because they want that customer to pay for the new transformer to feed the whole area.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
So they're blaming your property of the increased load on their grid. No, you're going to pay for a new transformer that's worth $700,000.
How much more front of mind is sustainability today versus 10 years ago or 13 years ago? Everybody wants, they're conscious. They want to be green. So like going off grid now is almost even en vogue.
It's
I live in a tiny home in the hinterland of Byron, and it's like, that is a thing.
Yeah.
They want that energy independence. They don't want to be controlled by the distribution network, do they? It's, you know, exactly. You're told what to do. Like recently,
less,
we just got this backstop
bunkers
thing.
Bunkers and tinfoil and more like millennials that wanted it off-grid.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've got quite a number of customers who are on-grid and have pulled the pin, have had meter abolishments and that kind of thing. We call them our grid defectors. That's what it's become. It's become such, there's so much mistrust in the electricity market. Mm. And that is causing people who can to completely pull the pin and say, no, I have the grid, but I don't want it. Mm. I'm going off grid completely.
But isn't it great that people now have that choice?
Mm. Yeah.
And that's where I think it's going. Mm. Yeah, it's going forward. You have that choice. So we're not saying either way, this is your choice. Mm. If you want to go that way, speak to people like yourself. I just think it's pretty good.
We haven't really had much choice in our electricity market up until this point, so it's good to get a little bit in there.
We haven't had much choice in anything. Let's bring the focus back to cost. I mean, how important are government rebates, like STCs, to the off-grid market?
Minimal, really? I'd say. Really? Yeah.
It's nice if you put the cash in your hand, but it's probably makes a small ripple.
I think in the scheme of the cost of an off-grid system, the STCs are a fairly low percentage of that. Mm. The customer's happy to get some extra cash back, of course, but I think in the scheme of making the decision, it's fairly minimal. We certainly don't see the highs and lows of that the grid connected market would around the multiplier drop. So
so there's not a solar coaster for off grid.
Well, there is, but just not rebate wise.
What is the solar coaster for off grid?
It's I think more closely related to the building market. Mm-hmm. When there's lots of homes being built or lots of land being opened up in fringe of grid regions, that's where you see the highs and lows. It's a little bit seasonal as well. Everyone's usually trying to get their home built before Christmas. And so we are always chockers right up until Christmas. And then all of those who didn't quite get their house finished before Christmas will move into January and February. But there's definitely highs and lows throughout the year. Not linked to rebates necessarily.
How important is Australian made when selecting products for off-grid?
I find it's one of the first questions that customers will normally ask is what's Australian made and what's not. Whether that follows through to their end decision or not, I actually don't know. But certainly it's front of mind for customers. They want to know. Whether there's anything local that they can purchase. I find using Australian manufacturers is hugely helpful in the support and service side of things.
Yeah.
If I've got someone who can get me a part or a replacement or anything and they are an Australia Post trip away, that's huge. That's absolutely huge. And also it means we can build really good relationships with them as well. They are an extension of our business, and to have those really fabulous relationships with suppliers is huge, because we can then help each other through different things.
And there's probably a bit of trust in that as well, is like, you know where to find them.
Yes.
Whereas something that's imported from overseas, so and it comes down to our it comes down to our businesses as well. Like, yeah, you're putting in
gun.
Yeah. I often say to people, because I have a sign on my fence in Warrnambool, and I often say to people,
"Well, the winner has a gun." I have the bullets.
Bullet Texas.
I often say to people, like, you know where to find me. Like, if something goes wrong, like, that's true as well with the manufacturer. It's Australian made. No, it's made here. They're right here.
Mm.
They can help.
Mm.
Like, yeah.
And it's employing local people.
Mm.
So
the history in business is very important as well. Like, from a distribution perspective, supply partners, I don't know about other distributors, but we are very, very strict on whose products we carry. And it comes down to how long have they been in business? How well do they support? Do they have an Australian office?
Mm-hmm.
Are they well diversified? Like, those are very important questions that we try to teach people, like the installers of the world, so that they can then pass that information on, because the end customer is the one who should be really making that decision on how much do I trust the products that are being installed in my house right now, especially for something like off-grid. It's just that is so pivotal to the decision process.
It's an investment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you're going to pay twice if you...
Yes.
If you, and try not to say, "I told you so."
You're not allowed to be smug about it.
I love the fact that, and it's not in... I can't really... You couldn't name too many other industries where you could build an off-grid system using Australian-made products wholly. Selectronic ARL Power Plus.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
Mm.
And you can provide something. The products are made in Australia, you know, we're doing the work, like, it stays here.
Yeah.
It's great.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people love it. They love it.
And we prefer on the inspecting side, because we know it will meet all the compliance issues.
That's right. Yeah.
Because there's so many products that are coming into the market that we see that don't even meet our Australian standards. And we know that those companies have done all the hard work.
Yeah, because they're here.
Yeah. And they know they have, Australia's fairly strict in our compliance when it comes to products, but they've done all that hard work.
Mm.
And for us as inspectors, we recognise that as well, of the products being installed.
Yeah, it's not just the labour that makes it expensive, it's compliance,
and there's a lot of testing that goes involved, and we know that these companies that like Selectronic have done a lot of work in making sure that their product is safe, tested correctly, meets all different conditions, environmental conditions. We know that that's all been done, so it does make our life easier too.
Everyone goes to bed and sleeps. That's
good. Can I ask one more question?
Yeah, in fact, keep going.
And Alex, how much increase do you see in commercial off-grid?
Yeah, definitely an increase in the last couple of years, with a combination of both commercial off-grid and also fringe of grid, grid augmentation, which is essentially this you're installing the same system but for a grid connected application, because they don't have the capacity or whatever in the grid. So and I think that increase is due to the technology change that we've had. There's the components out there these days that have the capacities that you can use for commercial enterprises, And yeah, things can be scaled up exponentially to meet those needs these days and not for an unachievable price for these businesses. Mm-hmm. So yes, definitely there's been an increase.
Yeah, a lot, especially those that have been running off diesel forever.
Yes, which is an expensive, stinky way of running your business.
It's one of the quickest return on investments for off-grid. Okay. That's a great target.
And certainly when you see all of the large mining companies switching from diesel to renewables now, when they're doing these kinds of things, you know that switch has happened, and these things are, you know, off-grid is more affordable than their diesel. Decision. Yeah, 100%. They're not making that decision out of, you know, ethics. They're making it because it's bottom line. Mm. It's cheaper and easier to have an off-grid system running their site than it is running it off a diesel generator. So, yeah.
Well, they're putting in big PV systems and all that, and virtually making their own community a big generating system.
Yeah.
To get rid of those old generators.
Absolutely. And for we've done a few mining sites that have been decommissioned, and they just need an off-grid system to run the operational maintenance side of that end of life of that site. And so off-grid plays a really good role there as well, is running this site in that sort of end phase of its life, to keep it going sustainably and renewably, rather than just running a generator to keep some lights on and whatever else they need going. So, yeah.
Well, we're sort of coming to the end of today, and I've just got a kind of a question for all of you, really, which is, what would you describe as the A to Z of starting an off-grid business? What are the ingredients?
Education.
Is probably number one.
So get training.
Training, obviously.
A few installs. Yeah. If it's actually something
so try before you buy.
Yeah. And my advice, probably, and it's certainly advice that we did from even our business, is that don't just jump into the deep end, do the big stuff. Start small and work your way up. Yeah,
quick way to go.
Yeah, quick way to go. If you do a big job, yeah, it sounds all good, but you can lose a lot very quickly.
Yeah, start small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the old go big or go home. Usually go home.
Yeah.
What about you guys? What would you say?
Well, you certainly followed those steps. In working for previous businesses, you did a couple of off-grid installs. Mm. You sussed it out. I mean, you had the passion for it anyway.
Yeah.
But tested it, did a few installs to see how it was, and now you've ended up with your own business. So certainly that was a successful pathway in.
Yeah, definitely.
Even if you're not going to be the installer, if you are just going to be a retailer or, you know, a marketing company sometimes. Mm. That was exactly what you said, the mentor, the network, making sure you've got all the right accreditation, having education and knowledge is obviously a very pivotal part of everything, because eventually it's going to come back to you and you're going to need to know what to do.
Mm. Know your product.
Yeah.
I think having a really good team around you, and whether that's one person or 16 people, it doesn't really matter. If you've got people around you that you can rely on and that will celebrate the wins when they happen and commiserate the losses and support, provide you that support. I think at any stage of that business development is really important, having that little support crew to see you through that journey, I think is really important.
Mm. So building your team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah, otherwise just have a go. Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's great.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, under... have someone looking over what you're doing. Don't just.
I think Alex has summed it up. Just have a go.
Give it a crack.
I mean, yeah, if opportunities arise, like, go. Mm-hmm. It's great. Yeah. I would say, yeah, from first phone call from when Off-Grid Energy called, I said, yeah, let's do it. And, haven't looked back.
Neither have we.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm big on planning too. I think having a business plan, harping on exactly what Em was saying earlier about knowing your customer. I think that's extremely important, knowing what your values are and what your, and you know, the line that you tread upon. You got to know what it is you want and know your customer and know who you are as well. I think that's so important in business because, man, nothing tests you like owning your own business. Mm. And especially in something as complicated as off-grid, you got to be fairly confident, I think, in knowing what it is you want.
Mm.
Well, thank you all for coming. It's been amazing hearing your journeys and everything from a cabin at Mount Baker to a mine site in South Australia to the front fence in Warrnambool and inspecting all of that.
Yeah, never stops.
Yeah,
no, it's been great. Cool. Great talking to you guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks. One of the secret weapons that we at Solar Plus have is that we know about the quotes that are going out. Yeah. And from those quotes, we can get an idea of how the market's changing. And we've had like 4,500 customers producing quotes over the more than 10 years that we've been in business. And so we can see what the changes have been over that time. One of the really interesting facts is that off-grid is about 3 times as much money as on-grid in terms of sale price. So one job, you're making 3 times as much. So there's a big plus. Yep.
Probably better margin as well.
Yeah. Also, there's a much higher approval rating. Something like 38.5% of commercial off-grid systems are approved. That's a really high approval rating. Rather than wasting your time on endless quotes that get turned down, that's a big plus. Between 2020 and 2024, the off-grid systems that Solar Plus have quoted have increased by, oh my gosh, this is 1,547%. Is that right, Jay? Whoa. So that's in common parlance, that's 15 times, isn't it? Yeah, so really a huge growth in just a matter of 4 years in terms of off-grid. Wow, so it's absolutely huge. Booming. Mm. I mean, maybe partly because the software's so good, but yeah.
No, it's reporting really well.
It's reporting really well, yeah.